Welcome back to another episode of WVU Today, the only show that sits squarely at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and modern marketing practice with our host, Cindy Greenglass. Hey, Cindy.
Hey, how are you doing, Paul?
Okay, I don't know what happened. The music there cut off quickly on me here. We want to quickly get into the show, I guess.
How's your summer been?
My summer's going good, but it's a little overcast here in sunny Southern California. We're down. We're drooping today here. We're hoping it's just haze that'll burn off here.
Oh, wow. You know, even paradise gets a little cloud covered.
That's right. Exactly. Exactly. Into each life. So what have you brought with you today? What topics are we going to discuss today?
Well, today we have as our guest Bill Jones, and Bill is one of our adjunct professors at WVU in the IMC program. And what is really fun for me to welcome Bill into our conversation, Dr. Jones, is that he was my professor when I took the WVU IMC Masters of Science program. He did teach me B2B marketing, and so it's really fun to have him as our guest today and to be able to hear and share with the rest of our listening audience his insight. I'd like to welcome in Professor Jones.
The thing I want to say is Cindy was absolutely a poster child for a wonderful student.
Just like she wrote it for you, just like she wrote it.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think I read it right. Anyway, a couple words about a little bit about my background. And if I somehow get off track here, Sydney, give me a poke. I have 47 plus years in industrial, primarily industrial, marketing and sales experience. I have my own company for 12 years. I've been in charge of large corporate divisions, and I also do pro bono consulting for minority startup and small business startups in the Grand Rapids, Michigan area. I have a couple things that I think are being interesting and important to touch on. These are not in any particular order, but they're all important. Number one, right now, everybody is advertising. It's almost a frenetic pace. So the question becomes, why should somebody buy from you? Why should somebody listen to you? So it's more important now than ever before to really do your homework on targeting your customers. All of your communications should point to why they would value your product. And it's not just telling them why they're going to value your product. You want to demonstrate. You want to talk about case studies where people improved, where people saved. And if you can, you can name names. Everybody is making noise out there, and you have to cut through the clutter. Now, something else to keep in mind, business-to-business marketing is not that totally different from consumer marketing. When you think about why people buy, why you buy, why I buy, when you get an organization or a corporation, that is an artificial legal construct to allow them to enter contracts. Corporations don't make decisions. Corporations don't buy. People buy. People make decisions. The same thought processes that you and I would use in buying a car or getting a new sofa are the thought processes they will use. It's all got to be personal. It's all got to be relationship. Now, when you're targeting, if you wanted to, let's see, come up with a new marvelous design for a metal. Let's say you have a metal. And you want to have the automotive companies use this. Every division of General Motors or every division of Ford Motors, division within their process groups, not whether it's a brand name, but engineering will have what they're looking for in value. Finance will have their what they're looking for. Their marketing department will be involved in this. You do not have one target of an automotive corporation. You have targets for each area that you can identify what that area values. Does that kind of make sense, Cindy?
Yes, that makes good sense, very much so. I want to dig into some of what you're sharing with us. You've got us kicked off with so much content there and so much to wrap our heads around. I'm going to ask a question and see if you can dig into this a little bit, and then we'll have our break in about five more minutes, and we'll come back with some more. So I want to ask you what some of the key B2B lead generation tools are that you are seeing successful in the market as you're digging into something, getting a little more tactical here, but addressing some of the things that you started to talk about.
What is successful is working to engender relationships. When I teach marketing face-to-face, and I'll have a class of 40 people, and I'll ask them, how many people here like to be sold? Nobody's hand goes up. I completely believe that people choose their suppliers, choose the people they want to do business with, very similar to the way they choose their friends. What am I looking for in a friend? I'm looking for somebody that I can trust. I'm looking for somebody that's not terribly afraid to tell me the truth if I'm doing something wrong. And I'm looking for somebody that I feel comfortable with moving forward in a relationship. That is what I think the target is for everyone's marketing. If you have a choice, who do you want to buy from? Do you want to buy from a friend? Do you want to buy from the Yellow Pages? You want to buy from a friend.
So how do you develop those relationships? I mean, we're looking in the, you know, it's one thing with our friends or in our communities where we have the ability to make those friendships and connections. A lot of times we say in business, you know, in the absence of those personal conversations, how are you developing and how do companies authentically develop those trusted relationships that mirror what we would do in our personal lives?
Absolutely. One of the strongest ways of doing that, which is much easier in our big computer era, is a fabulous website. Because with websites, you can put on case studies. You can put in white papers. If you were trying to get in this metal into General Motors or Ford, you're going to have people in engineering departments that really want to see a lot of heavy-duty equations. It's going to give everybody else the measles. You can have that available to them so they can see it and they can say, hey, these people are credible. It is very difficult to do that in individual advertising contexts. You are always looking for credibility. You are looking to explain how does somebody else use this to their advantage. And to make this really effective, you have to do your homework up front. If I'm telling Green Glass Manufacturing and I have no idea what you do, the chances of me stumbling around in the dark and find something that would bring you value, they're terrible. So you do your homework first. So you know, you can give three reasons why I think you would value my product. What I would tell my classes, what I do tell my classes, if you get up in the morning and you're getting ready to go out and knock on doors or figure out who you're going to send promotions to or whatever you're going to do, and you don't have those three solid reasons, you know their business, you know what they do, you know how you can help them. If you don't have three solid reasons, stay in bed because you're wasting everybody's time. Does that make sense?
It's your core business proposition. It's the elevator pitch. It's, yes, understanding and knowing what it is that makes your business differentiating. And so let's say we know what they are. I know Green Glass Manufacturing. We've got outstanding customer service. We've got flexibility and scalability. And we have tremendous logos and referenceable clients. So let's just say those are my three great differentials.
Absolutely.
Where do I go to tell my prospects in B2B these days?
You can use the things that we've already paid our taxes to support. Oh, when you fill out the census tells you, and all the businesses have to fill out and explain what they do. So if I have a customer, let's say for the moment, Abe Lincoln and I were in engineering school together. I co-opted a GE plant. We made light bulbs. If I have placed my product in a bulb manufacturing plant and they were successful with it, I can go online and I can find out every other light bulb manufacturing plant in the country. I can now specifically target who is in charge of the different areas of responsibility and why this would be a benefit to them. But I have to do my homework first to know where it works and who else would use this.
So we have to do our homework. I clearly agree with you there, Bill. That's for sure. You know, it does seem that there are also a lot of doing our homework, legal and ethical issues that are popping up in B2B and in B2C. We certainly know about COPPA for California's in the works. We've got GDPR coming up as far as legislation in Europe. There's some talk that other states are also talking about some legislation. We're looking at control in our online environment. What are you seeing in B2B? Is anything going on in the B2B legal or ethical that you're seeing some of that consumer challenges blowing over into B2B at all?
The company I'm working with now that is not pro bono, which is nice, and they are being buffeted by material cost increases out of blue because of certain war zones, and also by the tariffs brought about by political maneuvers. So the question becomes, it is not possible for companies to just absorb those, but do your customers, in an open and transparent relationship, do they know how you will respond? And it's not like, Cindy, I'm sorry, but we have to raise your price 65%. How's the weather there?
Okay. There you
exactly.
go. Well, thank you,
exactly.
Bob. We're going to take a quick break
Please.
So Paul can introduce you all back to WVU. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about metrics and data. We all said data is everything and metrics, and we know that that's what we teach and preach at WVU. So, Bill, I'd like you to think about, while we're on break, some of the strategies that can be used to measure in B2B, especially in an environment where you have channel partners and maybe not a direct relationship between buyer and seller. So think about that a little bit while I pass it back to Paul for a quickie break.
And while Bill is pondering his reply, let's ply you with some information here about West Virginia University's Online Data Marketing Communications Program. We've talked about it a lot. It's the sponsor of this program and the first graduate program of this kind in the country, focusing on strategic thinking, critical problem solving, and informed decision making. The Data Marketing Communications Program at WVU prepares you for your career by learning innovative tactics from award-winning faculty like those presented here today. You can earn all this and more if you'll type in these 9 simple letters. DMC for Data Marketing Communications. DMC at dmc.wvu for West Virginia University.edu. So once again, type in dmc.wvu.edu. And with that, we bring you back to Cindy and her guest.
Well, Paul, you're getting better at this.
I finally figured it out. It's just 9 letters. I don't know why I stumble it every week. 3 + 3 + 3. DMC plus WVU plus EDU. And you're there.
And you're there. Well, you know, this is, I think, our 38th or 39th program together. But you brought up, since we're going to start talking a little bit about metrics, one of those magical things, and that's the magic of threes. And the human brain prefers odd numbers to even, which we know is in psychology. And we also know that 3 is that kind of magic, parsed out number that we can use to comprehend things.
And can I throw in one other thought? I studied screenwriting for years, many years ago, and they always talked about the magic of threes in storytelling. It's not by accident. There's 3 little pigs and 3 wishes and 3 coins in the fountain. Every movie or play has 3 acts to it. So 3 is the, you know, good, better, best. 3 is the magic number in selling and in storytelling.
That it is. And we have 3 of us on this podcast.
There you go.
There we are.
Bill, let's start with one of our next 3 questions for you. Let's talk about some metrics and some data.
Okay,
and
let me hit on the threes for a second. When you are establishing your value, and I'm contacting you and we haven't met, I will give you 3 valid, in my mind, reasons that you could use my product effectively. I don't expect that all 3 of them are going to hit, but if I give you 3, I will cover the bet that I'm going to hit on one of them. And if I get into more than 3, it's too much information for in a short conversation for you to absorb. So 3 is the effective number there also.
There you go. 3 is the magic. Thank you, Bill. So let's jump in. Metrics and data and B2B tracking. Let's start with metrics and measurement.
Before you ever get money from corporate, they are going to want to know what they're getting back, unless you own the company. They're going to know what they want to know what they're getting back. So you have to have your goals specific. They have to be measurable. They have to be quantifiable, and there has to be a timeline. They will calculate what you're promising to return to them if it's worth giving you the money. And you have to have measurable outcomes. The guys with the eye shades and the rolled up white cuffs and have got bags of gold behind them, and you say, hey, we're going to work really hard on this and we're going to improve the perception of our product. It doesn't get you money. So you have to measure things. What specifically can you measure? You can measure how people perceive the product if that's what you're trying to do. Best measurement is when you can tie sales directly into your advertising, which is very difficult, very, very difficult. It's easier on direct response, much easier. But in general approach to other businesses, it's difficult to do that. In fact, one of the companies that I know that was very successful at doing that was Aflac. The quick story there is the ad agency was having a meeting with Aflac. They had no ideas. They were walking through Central Park seeing ducks, and one guy said, that sounds like Aflac. They looked at each other, and they said, literally, what the hell? We don't have anything else to talk about. So nothing changed from Aflac. You know, normally what makes it difficult is you have sales forces, you have competitors, you have all this noise going on out there. How do you know what was really effective for you? The only thing that changed is suddenly you've got this duck squawking Aflac, and their sales went to the moon. But it's very difficult to do that. So you want to try, when you're rolling things out, you want to try to know what you're going to measure, and you really want to test it in a small area first. That is very inexpensive insurance. You know, the three of us can sit here and decide we've really got this great idea and we missed something. And YouTube is full of commercials that got aired that were just absolute disasters, insulted half the world, and you know, the entire board of directors is on TV the next day apologizing. Test it. What am I going to measure? How am I going to measure it? And let's try it. Let's bring in a focus group. People will come in, and, you know, they're flattered that you're paying attention to them, and they give you great feedback. Wouldn't that have been wonderful to do before Coca-Cola rolled out New Coke? Or the DuPont came out with an artificial leather called Corfam, and it was absolutely fabulous stuff. You could hurt it. You could hit it with a hammer. You couldn't hurt the shoes. So they went with the high-end distribution. The problem was the shoes never broke in. So there were millions of shoes out there, high-end dress shoes, high-end business shoes, men's and women's, that never became comfortable, and they all came back. And a short market test of who their real customers would be, amazing.
Testing, very good. I'm glad you brought that up, testing being such an important part of what we do for in direct response, for sure. We, as performance-based marketers, use A-B testing all the time, an excellent way to read some results and be able to inform us before we put huge amounts of money into our spend. You know, being a direct marketer, I'm used to looking at A-B split testing in email. I'm used to looking at it in direct mail. We've got so many channels and media options today. You did mention some focus groups. What other ways can we test in B2B?
You can test at a trade show. You know, most industries have their own industry groups. They have industry-specific magazines, which will never die, because in addition to vendors' advertising, it has all the inside gossip of the industry. So they're going to be there for a long time. When you have a trade show, if it's absolutely enormous, like the plastics industry, you can take over the entire McCormick Place in Chicago. What better place to ask people for their honest opinions about things? Here they are. These are the people that work with it. If I could do this, would this make sense? If it's presented in such a way that you're not leading their answers and you get honesty back, that's amazing.
This time just flies by when I get talking, and Bill, you've been so insightful, and it's great to hear from you. My last question for you, we have about 5 minutes left. What are you teaching today in your WVU class, and maybe new innovative or on the horizon as developing trends?
Developing trend is to get everybody to sharpen their position statements and sharpen their target. Oh, several years ago, pharmaceutical company in selling, they figured out that the more feet you had on the street, the more business you would get dealing with doctors. And so everybody, every third person walking into a hospital is selling pharmaceuticals. So they had to get away from that force of just shutting it through and be much sharper at targeting. And it's the same thing now. You've got to do that. The other thing is you have to, particularly in today's headlines, when you're dealing with other businesses, you have access and your computer departments are sometimes linked. They sell a lot to the big box retailer of the world. They never have voice interaction. The big box sends them the orders that interlink with their computer and go right to the production floor. How safe are your channel partners, you mentioned earlier, how safe are your channel partners when they give you all that information and it's running through your system? That is one of the big concerns out there right now. It's not necessarily just the marketing, but everybody's data is becoming so linked, and the people that are trying to hack in are looking for the weakest links in the chain, and you don't want to be anywhere near one of that, being one of those weak links. That would be a great thing to promote on your website. Also, just a buy statement on one of the podcasts. If I'm presenting for this manufacturer in the channel, I say, by the way, this is what we're doing to protect everybody's data. Just a comfort statement.
Yeah.
Your product is not just the physical product. It's the brand. It's the reputation. And it's what I'm doing to protect the people I'm in a relationship with.
You got it. Well, I appreciate, Bill, the time you spent on our podcast today and sharing with us your B2B insights. You are part of our West Virginia University brand, and we appreciate you being our instructor and part of the program. Hope you enjoy the lazy days of August and the rest of your summer, and we'll be back at you next week. Back to you, Paul.
You've been listening to WVU Marketing Communications Today, brought to you live from West Virginia University, a biweekly program that sits at the intersection of data-driven decision-making and marketing practice. Only on the Funnel Radio Network, for at-work listeners like you.